Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Susie Kosten. Kosten is the National Shelter Director for the Farm Sanctuary, and she oversees a full department of caregivers, feeders, cleaners, and project workers so that the hundreds of rescued animals residing at farm sanctuaries in Watkins Glen and Northern California are given the best care possible. Kosten holds a master's in special education and has worked with people with disabilities, but felt her first calling was to work with animals. She has mentored many peers who have started sanctuaries around the U.S. and leads Farm Sanctuary's annual Farm Animal Care Conference. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I have to talk to you about this. You got a master's degree in special education and started out working with people. Now, did you think that was going to be your career goal?
I think that, like a lot of people, when I was in my 20s, I was kind of lost and didn't really know what I wanted. Both of my parents are professors, so it just seemed like the route to go. But I never was comfortable. I never really was comfortable doing that, although I teach a lot now. I teach caregivers how to be caregivers, but I wasn't happy. And then in the summers, though, I worked with animals, so that made me happy. So that's really how it all started.
Wow, so you discovered early on that you really would prefer to segue into that. Tell us what the form of it was. How did that transpire into working at the sanctuary?
When I first had decided not to teach, I had actually started volunteering in the summers for another sanctuary that I ended up working at for 6 years. It's the Pig Sanctuary in West Virginia. And I loved everything about it. It actually made me feel it was much more rewarding. There was something about working with animals that took me away from myself more. I think I was pretty self-focused when I was in my 20s. I had a lot of things going on that, you know, I think that I needed something or someone to, like, really make me not think about me, but think about, like, the greater good and someone that needed me. And the animals are so healing because at that point I had a lot of depression, and which is so far removed now from my life. But it was an amazing thing that they gave to me. And so from that point on, I just want to give back to them.
Yeah. Did you ever consider going to veterinary school because of that?
I did consider going to vet school. One of the main reasons I didn't, and one of the main reasons that a lot of animal rights people don't go to vet school, is what you have to do in industrialized farming. You have to learn how to do docking tail without anesthesia, cutting teeth, doing, like, neuters without anesthesia. So all of these things I don't think I could have handled, because when I first met them, I was so touched by animals and felt such a deep connection. I could not do something, even in the short term, to hurt them, to learn something in the long term.
Yeah.
What we've learned, I've been doing this almost 20 years, so I think what I've learned now actually is actually more beneficial, because these are also animals that aren't treated normally. So we're seeing things that no one will ever see. No one treats a chicken that's supposed to live 40 days, and we treat them and they live 5 years.
Yeah.
So we're doing things that aren't done. So I really think that the way it all happened was the way it was supposed to happen.
Yeah. So you segued from working with people with disability to working with animals who in some ways have many disabilities. Was the pig farm stocked with pigs that had been abused and so on too?
Yeah, it started out as a potbelly pig rescue. But what it turned out to be is it started out as that, but then it became really a farm sanctuary. It had lots of, like, you know, industrialized pigs. It had lots of cattle. It ended up with lots of goats. So they would take in various rescues. And what I saw with that, it was my first exposure to most of those animals. It allowed me, though, to actually get to know who they were. And then as I got to Farm Sanctuary, Farm Sanctuary is very well known for really trying to do the best care and really taking care of these animals on a different level. So I started out, you know, learning all about the animals in some ways, and then by the time I got to Farm Sanctuary, I really got into, like, the medical part, too, much more. And we are doing things. It's incredible, actually. We have cattle that live to be 30, so we're doing things for animals who become geriatric, who never live more than a few years in the industry. We're trying to take, you know, genetic changes and selective breeding changes and making these animals comfortable. So it's such a rewarding job. One of the biggest disabilities they come in with is fear. They're terrified. And so to watch an animal who is so fearful, and then they turn around and they blossom and they bloom and they become who they are, is the most incredible feeling. So no matter how bad, you know, the industry actually is, and it is, that hope that you see is just the most fulfilling thing.
Oh, I'll bet it is. Now, you're sometimes referred to as the farm animal whisperer. So talk to us a little bit more about some of your relationships with animals and your feelings.
I think with animals, and I think with people, I think with everyone that's alive and has feelings, you know, just like animals know, when someone loves and respects you, that you just do. And when I look at them, the love is so incredibly deep that there's no way they don't feel it. So I think the whispering is not, it's not, I have no talent of like, you know, I can talk to them. I know them, though. Like,
you're not Dr. Doolittle,
right? No, I'm not Dr. Doolittle, but I know them. I want to learn as much as I can about them. So I know them individually. And they know, like, you know, when you have a dog, that's a very good example, actually. When you see your dog and you light up, they light up. Like, that feeling is just so contagious. And farm animals are no different. So they get used to who you are. I'm kind of loud, and everybody's always like, I don't understand. Like, people try to be very quiet around them. Some of the animals are very, they like you for who you are. Uh-huh. So they don't necessarily just like people that are quiet or people that are loud, but they like people that they know like them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they feel it.
And all the animals I've had cats and dogs and turtles. And I mean, you sense something from them. It's a personality as well. And it does make you feel special because you know there are some animals that do not like some people.
Oh, I know.
I mean, there's no question about that. So that's an amazing relationship. Now, I want you to take us through what happens when an animal is rescued. Are you part of the rescues ever?
Yeah, oh, lots of times.
Okay.
I go back and forth. If it's a big rescue where it's going to require a lot of medical, I will go. Mm. The Iowa pig rescue is probably the best example of what we do. I have three guys or three people go from our farm to Iowa long before I went down there and assessed the situation. We weren't allowed to go on the levees to get the pigs because the floodwaters were dangerous and they've been shooting the pigs and it was a terrible situation. Oh. 250,000 pigs, I think, killed in that flood.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact numbers. But then when we got there, there were still 250 pigs left. By the time they let us on, there were 65. Yeah, they'd just been shot or they died. It was really, really tragic. So my guys were actually there doing the actual, like, capturing of the pigs with a lot of other groups, like IFAW, which is International Fund for Animal Welfare. A couple other groups were involved, American Humane, and a couple, local groups were involved. So we all went down there, but what my job was once they got them in, was to assess their health conditions and actually start treatments. Mm-hmm. Because we had 10 days with them before we could move them. You have to have all these laws for moving animals. So for the 10 days that we were capturing every single pig, I stayed down and did medical treatments. So I was giving fluids and making sure that they got the right antibiotics. A lot of them were very sick.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible sunburns. Really, actually, burns where all of the top layers of skin were just coming off in these thick scabs. So it was a lot of really, you know, heavy work. But we didn't, we actually had two pigs that had to be put down. But other than that, they all came home with us. So it was really, really amazing. And we still have so many of those pigs. So it was just a really great rescue. But that, and I did transport then too. So I did kind of both. I helped drive them back. And then I, you know, did the medical care. So that's my role. But my staff's role, I have staff that stays back and sets up everything. So when we get back, we have absolutely everything we need. Like the barns are set up and the medications that we need are there. So we're in constant contact. The first group of pigs came back while all of us were still in Iowa. So I had caregivers that took care of them the whole time. We had pigs that went to Cornell. So there's all these different, you know, components to it. I have a cleaning staff that helps us move the animals and helps us.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's such a team of people that do this work. I can't stress enough how amazing that team is. And rescue actually really brings that team together. So it went pretty flawlessly for all the things that could have happened.
So when you bring the animals to Farm Sanctuary, at first, are they segregated for quite a while?
Yeah, we quarantine everyone. There's so many diseases, especially that farm animals carry. Mm-hmm. And so we have resident animals. So our quarantine area is way off-site. It's not, they can't touch anyone on the main farm.
Oh, I see.
We also have enough staff that there is a staff that's dedicated to just dealing with quarantined animals, so they're not going back on the main farm, which is nice. And so we had that going on at that time. We actually had volunteers that have vet backgrounds that actually came for the Iowa rescue, so they just work with the pigs. So that was amazing as well. And during that time, you're doing everything. You're getting them healthy. We had to spay everyone. So we had 50 females that had to be spayed.
Good Lord.
So they all had to go to Cornell. it was an amazingly hard rescue. We had a mother, and we had two mothers that had babies, so we had to be round-the-clock care with them. We had so many of them had pneumonias that we were treating every single day. And as we're doing that, we also have a placement person who's finding finding homes. So that person's doing all the home finding, and then we have to have the state vet come out and do blood work, and it takes all of this time.
That is a huge undertaking,
isn't it? It's months and months and months of work, but it is the most rewarding because we were talking about, we had 30 gestation sows who have been in crates. So these are animals who basically would have had their whole life just giving birth like machines in a crate, and they were outside and they were happy wow. and rooting and they were skittish. We had a lot of them that had signs of, you know, post-traumatic stress. They would do like repeat behaviors.
Oh, yeah,
they didn't want to
yeah.
be touched. Two of the ones we kept actually were untouchable. If you touched them, they screamed. Now they're fine, which it took years, though. Those took a few years. And then the other ones that had, like, a touch of the post-traumatic stress or, like, really had some behavior issues went to other sanctuaries. Most of them actually went to Florida, and they're doing great, too. So we, you know, we had to check on them. And so, yeah, it's like in 2008 we did this rescue, and they're all...
God,
doing so
what amazing
really,
stories. Yeah. People need to hear these kinds
yeah.
of stories. Now, you know what I was going to ask you, too? I've never asked Jean this. Do you allow animals to procreate on the farm ever?
No, we never allow animals to procreate. What we do allow is if, like, two of the sows that came in, the gestation sows that came in from Iowa, were so far along in their pregnancies, and they were so fragile that aborting was not, it really wasn't an option. So they were allowed to have their babies. We just rescued a gestation sow last year who gave birth in like 8 hours. So we didn't have a choice with that one. But so if they come in so far along in their pregnancy, obviously we're not going to terminate the pregnancy, but we do terminate pregnancies when they come in. There's not enough homes. We're talking about, the numbers are so staggering. 10 billion farm animals die a year, just in the U.S. That's land animals. That's not fish. That's not anything else. It's just the land animals in the factory farm system. That's, you know, 10 billion, not 10 million. And it's shocking. So even with all the animals we rescue, it's the tip of the iceberg, but there are never enough homes ever for yeah. the ones that need to be rescued or need homes from, you know, whatever reason. We get about calls for about 300 to 400 a month.
Wow.
That we can't take them all.
So it's just like domestic animals. People
exactly.
people are being totally irresponsible.
Yes.
About this
yes.
kind of thing. I want to talk to you about this too, because you have such a love for animals. Why do you think there's still such a reputation that animals aren't intelligent, especially pigs? Especially pigs have a bad rap.
I think the bad rap was created as a way to rationalize. Mm. Because I can't imagine that as a human that we would see someone that's that intelligent and be like, it doesn't really matter. Because we don't, if we honestly needed meat to survive and there was some respectful, you know, something, I don't know how you would respect anyone that you would kill, but if there was some need, I would understand something, I think. But I'm around vegans most of my life, uh-huh. and they're some of the healthiest people I've ever met. So I know it's not a need. So when I look at that and you see, like, the waste and the amount of animals that are killed, like, the numbers, again, are just staggering.
Oh, yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me. But I think that we, as a society, as a people, we rationalize. I used to smoke. I rationalized that I would never get sick because I'm, you know, I have all these other things that are happening that are good. I think you rationalize, yeah, to uh-huh. feel good about something that you're doing that I think deep down you know isn't necessarily good.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, my guest is Susie Costin. She's the National Shelter Director for Farm Sanctuary in both Watkins Glen and in Northern California. Now, you know, as a species, we've come a long way, too, in regard to animals. Where do you think we still need to go? Did you foresee a time when people will never kill animals? I can't imagine, but...
I have a hard time imagining it, too. But I really do want that to be the case. I think that what's changing now is social media. I really do. Mm. I think things that you could never, videos you could never get out before because of advertisers and all these different people that really, like, we would try to put an ad in about, like, anti-dairy that was nothing. It wasn't graphic. It wasn't anything. You could never get those ads anywhere. You just couldn't do it because the Dairy Council would go against it, and dairy was a big advertiser. So people wouldn't lose their dairy advertising money to do something. So social media allows all of that stuff to become viral, and that's never, ever happened. And so people are starting to say, like, wow, this is really, really bad.
Yeah, and we've noticed it around chickens in cages and the, you know, the cages for laying eggs and stuff. I remember when I was shocked years and years ago when Jean Bauer came on the first time and talked about that.
Yeah.
It hadn't been known.
I know, and it's so sad because it's like 98, 99% of animals that are used in the, like, for food in the United States still come from those systems.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I think there's a whole local movement. It's so small. And yeah. I think people think, like, well, I only do this and I only do this. But that's not the majority of the population, and it's also more expensive. So people are always going to go to these cheaper alternatives, which are these animals that are raised in these horrible systems. I do think that people are getting a lot, like 10 years ago, you couldn't go anywhere and get vegan food. Now everything says vegan. Like you go to Wegmans and there's like a V for vegan on like all these different products.
Absolutely,
that they carry.
Yeah.
So something's changing. There's definitely been a shift. I think people are more concerned about their health, or people, I think they've always been, but I guess the people who are more concerned about their health are now seeing that.
And I think they have more choices to take that concern further into their diets, you know?
Yeah, they're not worried about just eating tofu, which used to be the big joke that vegans only ate tofu. Yeah. So I think people are seeing food a different way. I think people are more aware of the system. So I think as that happens, it will be knocked down.
You know what's so strange to me, Susie, is the fact that you talk about social media and all the opportunities one has because of it. But we also see the rise of corporations in ways that have never happened before.
No, it's terrifying.
It's such a contradiction.
It is. It's the best and the worst. It's absolutely both. And you have to, hopefully we will only take advantage of what we can do that's good. Unfortunately, no one will ever do that. Everyone takes advantage of something that's, you know, that prominent. But I think that people, it's if we slowly break down the larger system, which I think is happening a little bit, not a lot. And it is going down. The consumption of animal products is going down minimally. But I think if you break down that system, people will realize the reason that system exists is because you cannot sustainably feed this planet what they want to eat, animal product-wise. You can't. There's not enough land space.
We can see the results of that happening now because GMOs are taking over, and they're saying that they need to do that to feed the planet, right?
But if we could change a diet as a planet, none of this would have to happen.
Yeah.
Because the environmental impact, too, is huge. The water impact. So much water goes to raising these animals, and there's a water shortage in so many countries, and yet that is the one thing, if you took away, you could solve. And I think it's very frustrating because it does touch so many aspects of life, not just, oh, I love animals. It really touches every aspect of every human being's life, including the saving of our planet. So I think the more that message gets out, obviously, the better. Unfortunately, large corporations do not want that out.
I know there's two extremes to the sanctuaries. You know, one's in New York, one's in California. How do you deal with animals' health in winter here, and if it gets too hot in California? How do you deal with that?
Well, we actually have three sanctuaries now. We have one
That's
in
right.
Southern California
That's right.
as well,
That's right.
which is also very hot. So, yeah, obviously it's very, very different. We winterize here. We obviously, for months, winterize everything. So the barns are winterized, which is actually like kind of making sure there's no drafts and making sure there's no, you know, airflow going through because it's too cold. Mm-hmm. Most of the animals do very well in the winter. Cattle do fantastically in the winter. They get these big fuzzy coats. And we leave the barn open. So every animal has access to a barn 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We never kick them out and leave them out. But they choose sometimes to stay out in the snow and eat, which I think is funny, instead of coming in. The sheep love the snow. The sheep jump around and play in the snow. They're so thick-coated. Goats hate the snow. So we have all these coats on the goats, which is really funny. There's a woman that makes us coats.
You literally put coats on them?
Oh, yeah. They have winter coats, just like we do, because they don't have, especially my older goats, don't have a lot of body fat. So they really do need, like, something extra. We're terrified, obviously. Barns and fires are very scary, so we don't do heat lamps and all of those things that could be dangerous. So most of the birds come inside into smaller areas where they're nice and tight, and because they produce a lot of heat, too. Their body temperature is about 106, so they're very warm animals anyway. So by getting them closer together in the winter, they actually keep themselves very warm. So winter here is you know, the biggest issues that we have is illness, usually with the older animals or the industrial animals. They're very prone to pneumonia. Mm-hmm. So in the summer, though, that's where we have the problems in California. But we have cooling systems in all the barns with Mr. Fans. Again, they have access
wow,
to their barns.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, they have some of those barns are so nice, actually, in the summer. But the wind, we have a lot of airflow going through. So the animals are kept very comfortable. But there are hourly checks in California during the summers because some of the older animals, pigs especially, don't do well in heat. We have a lot of skin cancers in pigs. They all have to have sunscreen
all
the time.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's each shelter has its season where it's a nightmare. And ours is right now. And then California, obviously, is in the summer.
You talk about how some of the animals love to prance around and play in the snow. It's too bad people can't see that because you're closed in the winter in Watkins Glen.
And the good news is we have been filming a lot more stuff. And one of the things that I love the most is in Watkins Glen, especially when it's spring after the winter, everybody goes crazy. Cattle are jumping off the ground. Everybody's happy. It's like this whole, like, renewal of life. It is spring.
And they know it.
Oh, they know it. And they love it. And the chickens run around all over the farm. And, like, in the winter, they're all huddled together. So, yeah, I wish that we had just cameras everywhere, because it is one of the most, it is also one of the ways that you can see that they are individuals. And they really love life. They enjoy life, probably much more than most people, because they're not stuck thinking about all the horrible things that could be possibly happening.
Yeah. Like the barn burning down.
Yes. And yeah, they don't worry about that. They know it's on us, yeah.
God, that's just amazing to me. Tell us what a typical day would be for you in Watkins Glen, on maybe not in winter, but when the tourists are coming and stuff. What would you be doing?
Well, typical days are never typical, unfortunately. Like, this morning was not a typical day. This morning, we had probably three emergencies, which is not typical, thankfully. A typical day is there's a caregiver that goes out and does medication. It's either me or one of the other caregivers, and they do AM meds. So right now we have about 130 animals out of 600 that are on some kind of medication, either pain meds. Turkeys are prone to pain. Arthritis.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
As they get older, because they're so large. The broiler chickens, the ones that are, you know, usually dead in 40 days, are huge. So they have leg issues. So we have a whole group of animals on pain meds. Our elderly cattle get pain meds.
How do they present pain? You just know it?
Or? Well, yeah, you know it. A lot of them will stop walking. You're talking about animals. Unfortunately, sheep are the hardest. And some of the birds are very hard, because they are prey animals, so they hide any kind of issue. Yeah. But some of them, you learn to recognize their pain. Birds tend to open mouth breathe. Like, because, you know, when you're in pain, you feel almost like your breathing is much more rapid.
Yeah.
You feel like you're hot. You have all these things. They show those same signs. They don't show them until they're really at a point where it's hard. So really what we try to do is know them enough that you can see subtle changes. They're not getting up as much. They're not running over to their food. There's all these different things that you start to notice.
Yeah.
And then you check them. We do health checks every week, so everybody's handled. So you're basically feeling joints and making sure everybody doesn't have, like, crepitus in the joints. So we have a lot of animals that have arthritis. Older cattle slow down. They stay with the herd, but it takes them, you know, 25 to 30 minutes to get up the hill. That's when they usually go to our special needs herd, and they're put on, like, a pain management regimen, which changes their whole life. Pigs won't get up. So pigs are pretty easy, and they're very, you can see them limp. They're not frightened of people, so they're pretty obvious when they're in pain. And then we have a lot of pigs on pain meds, because these are animals that, if left to be just to eat on their own, would be like 1,500 pounds. Our pigs are like 700 or 800 pounds, but they're 250 pounds in the industry at 6 months. So all that weight really does a lot of damage to the growth plates. So you're constantly dealing with issues of arthritis later in life. But you can manage their pain, and they still have running and frolicking and have a great life. So that's one of the things we medicate for, pneumonias or any disease, any kind of sickness that comes in.
That's so much like domestic animals, though, you know? They do not show pain. I mean, they're very stoic.
They need to.
And our vets tell us, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and animals can tolerate this more than we can. They don't feel sorry for themselves.
They don't overthink it. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
We talk about that all the time, that like, if you have to have an amputation because an animal, we've had animals that come in that have to have a leg amputation. They don't miss a beat. They don't dwell on, you know, the sadness of it. They don't dwell on, like, this is going to change my routine. They just want to be alive. So they, you know, you give them a prosthetic and they're walking around on it that day. I have a goat in a wheelchair right now who
that is unbelievable.
Runs to the gate in the morning. You open up the gate and she runs all over the farm. Her routine did not change. She cannot use her back legs right now. It's most likely old age. They're guessing it's a tumor in the spine. She's had so many issues health-wise, and she's old, but her will to live is insane. She is so happy. And
wow.
Yeah, so
that is so great.
Yeah, it is great.
Oh, that's so wonderful. You know, I want my listeners to please get out to Farm Sanctuary in the spring and summer when it opens again. I have had so many amazing moments with the pigs. I lay down with them.
Yeah.
I they are just such amazing animals.
They're social.
To be able to lay down with them, and some they'll grunt at you sometimes.
Yeah.
And they seem to love to be rubbed,
of
them. Oh, I've had some, it's like poetic moments.
It is.
For me with
the
pigs.
And the pigs have this highly, like high social structure. There's a head pig. Our head pig is Truffles. She's a female. Females are almost always the head of the herd.
Mm.
They vocalize with each other so much, but they are social creatures. And they sleep, they spoon. So there's, like, usually rows of pigs that are one group, and they spoon together. And and they mourn loss. A lot of times when we have pigs that have been together for like 10 to 15 years, when one dies, the other one dies very quickly after. They kind
wow.
of shut down.
God, it's like people.
They're like very much like people, especially the pigs. The cattle are too. The animals, each animal has a mourning process. I think the higher the flight response, the less you will see it.
Mm.
I think that's the main thing, because you're talking, if an animal's vulnerable, they can't mourn. Or they're dead. Like, so...
I see.
Yeah, so
uh-huh.
they're programmed to be a certain way. But the cattle mourn, and the cattle also... we've had cattle chase you away from the dead. They're very protective of animals who are down and sick, but they're big. So their flight response is very different than the sheep, who are not. They're much more docile. They're much more fearful. And they're programmed that way. The pigs aren't scared. So the pigs are very... You know what the pigs are feeling all the time.
Wow, God, that is... Yeah. Oh, I just love that. Yeah. People need to hear these things. They need to go out and meet these animals.
Well, they're all individual. Like, I have a barn with... Right now we have 36 pigs. Of those 36 pigs, every one of them has a very, very distinct personality. And each person has a relationship with a different one that's like, that's their pig. Like, they have this this bond. And it almost reflects their own personality. I tend to like the ones that are louder. And my staff, like the most docile people, like the more docile pigs. How they fit in the hierarchy seems to also connect to how people relate to them. Kids are my favorite when they come. If they see an animal being bullied, you can tell if a child is being bullied because they are advocating for that animal that's being bullied and so against the bully. It's like your personality, you can see your own personality in them when you let yourself.
That's so great. Susie, we're almost out of time. We have a couple minutes left. Can you talk to us about how animals have made your life so much richer? And talk to us a little bit about that.
I remember when I met them, I was going through so many things. I had depression and I had a lot of anger and I had all of these things. I had this inability to be forgiving, and then I saw them, and then I saw where they came from, and they forgive everybody. Like, it may take a while,
yeah.
And even if it's fear, there's still forgiveness. There's still the ability to go through things that are so much more horrible than anything I ever went through. Like, you go through these things in your life, and you just think they're the most devastating things on the planet.
Yeah.
And then when you see a being who you know has those same feelings as you, like they feel pain and fear and all of the things that we feel, they feel empathy, which I think people have a hard time understanding. So, but you, to know that these animals are going through all these torturous things on a daily basis, and yet when you take them out, they appreciate you and they forgive you and they move on with their life and they don't let everything weigh them down and they're not like so psychologically paralyzed by this life. Once they get a chance to have a real life, that taught me how to be a better person. I think it taught me to not be so entrenched with my own personal garbage, which is really, I think, something that really paralyzes
humans. What a great lesson. Well,
it is a great lesson, and it's something that it's just so simple.
Yeah.
Once you see someone else do it. And it's been the thing that's changed who I am. I feel like I'm not even close to being the same person.
Susie Cawson, can you give us some contact information in case anybody wants to get in touch?
Yes. Please always come to the farm, but our website is www.farmsanctuary.org. You can reach us anytime at info@farmsanctuary.org. Please come to the farms and really meet these animals. They're amazing animals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Susie Cawson, thank you so much for joining us. Again, my guest has been Susie Cawson. She is the National Shelter Director for Farm Sanctuary, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.